I will be following on from some of what Brian has been talking about, not on what politicians get out of media participation, but on what the media industries themselves get out of audience participation. This project that I and Trine Syvertsen and Tanja Storsrud and a number of others have been working on for some years had as one of its starting points that audience participation was something that had been a part, obviously, of broadcasting and mass media, but that was getting to be expanded with the penetration of digital media. So we thought it might be worth taking a sort of an overall approach to the phenomenon of participation, understood as ordinary people being a part of the media output. Second observation, and one that will be fairly important in this presentation, is that this development is sometimes being portrayed as a transfer of power and sovereignty to the audience, or to the audience become user. That, we thought, would not be our approach primarily. Our approach would be that this audience participation is something that the media industries themselves have uses for. So it can be seen as a sort of a new means of exerting power and a new means of gaining institutional acceptance and a new source of revenue. In short, there are all sorts of strategic reasons, possible reasons, why audience participation might be interesting for the media industries to move into. So basically, that later point will be the focus for what I'm going to say today. And more specifically, I'm going to base myself mainly on a survey that we did in 2005 with what we call decision makers in the Norwegian media industries. Decision makers that were and are making decisions on participation-based output, or at least output that has audience participation as an important feature. That means we were looking particularly at people who were somehow involved in interactivity or cross-platform formats. What I'm going to say today is I'm not going to sort of try and run through that whole survey. I'm going to say something about what decision makers make of the participant and how they see the participant as fundamentally active. I'm going to say something about the need for loyalty, which is something that this survey brought out very strongly. And finally, I'm going to say something about the uses of democracy in a media industrial setting. Democracy was not something that our survey was specifically geared towards, but it did come up. And moreover, it came up that arguments to do with furthering democracy and arguments to do with freedom of expression are put to various kinds of use. In a certain sense, they become means to other ends. And I'm going to say a bit about that at the end to try and fit in at this occasion. But I'm not going to claim that this survey was geared specifically for the purpose of investigating decision makers' views on democracy. Indeed, we do take a fairly wide approach to participation. In Norwegian, the word we use and the word the industry decision makers use is deltakelse, literally meaning taking part, teilnehmen, which does not have quite as strong connotations towards the civic and the political, as does the Anglo-American word participation. So in our survey, there's a lot of deltakelse that's decidedly unpolitical. Somebody voting for a competitor on Idol, for instance, somebody flirting on the Dagbladet website, for instance. Now, this study that was concocted collectively by our research group contains 45 semi-structured interviews. Well, parts of it was structured, part of it was semi-structured. We also have some supplementary interviews that that we've drawn here and there, but they were not part of the uniform research design that we had on our 45. Now, the ones we interviewed were executives, editors, and strategists who were involved in outputs that emphasized audience participation. So this is definitely not a survey that is representative of decision makers in the Norwegian media industries generally. We do think, however, that it is broadly representative of media industry decision makers who are involved with media participation. And most of them are also in some way or another involved with digital media in some way. We would not, for instance, interview the editor of the biggest newspaper, VG. We would, however, interview the editor of VG's net web page. We would not interview the head of the NRK. We would interview people in the doing the web page, doing interactive media of some kind, of different kinds. And a lot of these people that we interviewed would count as somehow involved in cross-media production, in combinations of broadcast or mass media on the one side and different sorts of digital platforms on the other. We asked them about audience activities, what sorts of activities they were providing, what their views were of their users or their audience. We asked them about strategies, current and future strategies in the area of audience participation. We asked them about business models, and we asked them to predict the future. In some respects, this resembles what applied research sometimes calls the Delphi study, which is a sort of a research design where you ask decision makers what they think the future will be, and then you write a report for some other industry person for him or her to be able to move strategically for the future. When we asked decision makers about the future, it was simply because how they believe the future will be is largely how it's likely to be, given that it is they who decide. Now, just a couple of things from the closed question part. One overriding thing across different sectors. I probably should mention this. We covered the broadcasting sectors, newspaper sectors, audiovisual production companies, and mobile content providers. Now, across these sectors, there was a fairly strong belief that participation-based output was going to increase in the future. You know, so there was seemed to be a general agreement that there's quite a lot of it now, and we're going to have even a lot more. So to the question, audience-generated content will increase dramatically in the next 5 years, everybody in the newspaper sector strongly agreed, and 12 out of 15 in the TV and broadcasting sector. Kind of an interesting thing, it does seem to be a fairly big discussion within the media industries is whether audience participation is a youth thing, something the kids predominantly do, or whether it isn't. And there's some indication that these decision makers are starting to think that it is not a youth thing. More specifically, 26 out of 39 strongly disagree that audience participation will always remain a youth phenomenon. And sort of surprisingly, actually, 22 out of 39 strongly or partly agree that people are more willing to pay to contribute their own content than receive content. So that is probably indicative of a very strong optimism about the possibilities for generating revenue. And not just will it be cheaper because people make content themselves, but it will be, you know, we'll make money because they buy to see virtually their own content. So who could resist that, you know, as a prospect? Now, a couple of other things more to do with some overall notions that tie in with this seminar's topic. 34 or 39 strongly or partly agree to the statement that audience participation opens up for democratization and an extension of the freedom of expression. So, you know, they're happy to, a lot of them are happy to go along with that. But other questions that we put to them sort of makes the matter more complex, because a lot of them will also, and a lot of the same people, will agree to that these developments are partly or largely entertainment-driven. So 25 or 39 agree that people who engage in audience activities do it mainly for fun. And a majority partly or strongly agrees that people are more willing to pay for entertainment than information. Now I'd like to say a couple of words about the active participant, because a finding from our survey, and one that crosses media sectors, it seems, is a very strong profession of faith in the activeness of your audiences. And this, you know, this goes for the broadcasting industries as well. So insofar as broadcasters used to conceive of the audience as passive, you know, we don't really find that. Instead, of course, that has something to do with the people we ask. But still, it's kind of interesting the way that, you know, in open-ended questions, they will emphasize this. Everyone is active as long as it is relevant, says one. And this guy, Bjørn André Myklebust from the NRK, actually, says, people have been into audience participation since the beginning of television. It's just that the means are changing. So that in the eyes of this informant, the activeness and the sort of drive to participate is now something that's, you know, it's really been there all along, and it's now just being brought out. So we've written a piece sort of half speculating that this might be the navigator from web media, from digital media. Of course, in that context, the activity of the user is more or less taken for granted. But this notion is now sort of spreading throughout the broadcasting industries, it would seem. Another key term crops up everywhere in the survey. Really, the decision we asked them to rank different sort of reasons for developing audience activities, and the reason that comes out on top is building loyalty. These decision makers seem extremely concerned to build loyalty, this is probably, you know, partly a defensive reaction and partly a recipe for acting more offensively or aggressively. Of course, the general situation in the Norwegian and, I guess, international media industries is partly competition becomes ever more stiff, ever more hard to manage, and also there's a proliferation of platforms. And the result of this is that for the media industry is becoming increasingly concerned with loss and leakage of audiences to competitors and onto other platforms. And interactivity is sort of a very comforting thing because it brings potentially brings people back. You don't have to grab their coattails and try to keep them from going away, because interactivity will bring them back, so to speak, by their own volition. And this is probably what makes the whole thing of loyalty building so attractive a notion. And some of my colleagues have written an article suggesting that this notion of loyalty may now be replacing or partially replacing notions of credibility and authority as key qualities to develop and to communicate to your audience or users. But of course, the recipe is very sort of succinctly put by Sebastian Loeberg here. Interactivity creates loyalty. It's a formula. And the next killer application, the thing that is mentioned, the device that gets mentioned as examples of what people want to move into, whether you ask newspaper people or TV people or production company people, what we need to move into is communities. This is, of course, this is a fashion. There's always one coming up, and that's the one that's coming up now. And the reason, again, why it's coming up is that it seems to be the best solution to the whole loyalty conundrum. So there are a couple of quotes here. The more community-based the output, the stronger and more cumulative the response you will get. And from the newspaper Aftenposten, for us it is important to recruit new readers and retain them on our website. That will earn us their loyalty, and it is important for us to have loyal readers who will return and use us often. So interactivity, digital return channels, funnels your audiences, turns them into users on your website, and the more they mill around, the more they write in, the more engaged they will be, and the more loyal they will be. They will be more and more inclined to stick around, and they will be more and more inclined to come back. That's the thinking. That's the recipe. Now, to the democratization motive. There's a couple of things that you might want to just have out in the open, straight up. The fact that this is, you can't obviously can't deny that this is lip service at one level. It's the right thing to say, so they say it. Of course, there's an element, you want to assume that there's an element of lip service. A researcher resembles a journalist or a public figure enough for a decision maker to want to to lift up that argument because it looks good. And another fairly clear thing from our survey is that. As for concrete decision-making on participation-based output, motives to do with democratization and freedom of expression can be expected to take second seat to concerns to do with revenue and loyalty, particularly those two. Perhaps also innovation. That's the third reason for developing participation services. That comes out very clearly. The need to find the next killer application by taking risks with developing new platforms, new services, new formats. Now, having said that, the democratization motive does come up and would hardly have played any kind of a role if it was not broadly compatible with strategic interests. it's sort of uninteresting, I think, to think about the putting into practice of democratic ideals or ideals of freedom of expression if you did not put it into the larger context of the media organization that is supposed to make this public. And that media organization, by virtue of its own weight, metaphorically speaking, will always introduce matters of economics, of strategy, of other types of legitimation, of logistics even, that will inevitably mingle and fight it out with the democracy bit of it, and regularly will win over that one. All right. So what our informants say when they choose to talk in terms of democracy or democratization is things like, we believe there is a democratization and a benefit in the fact that people are allowed to express opinions and participate. And in the context of TV chats, SMSs ordered into chat form on the screen, political TV chats at their best can serve their purpose, which is that of democracy building in its best sense and allowing far more people to express themselves publicly than only the well-spoken and the experts. When I did this presentation in another context, there was a French academic listening, and he found it sort of interesting that somebody would actually separate, on the one hand, the experts, and on the other hand, the well-spoken. Now, activity plays into the way that democracy is being conceived, I think. And it plays into it by making democracy and expression a sort of a natural complement to this basic activeness, which is portrayed by one informant as a sort of a force of nature. I believe people are born to participate in some form or other. There's an engagement there to begin with. When you ask people to be interactive, you are actually tapping into a primal thing. So this, now this notion of activity as primal is something that other motives can be latched onto. And expressing opinions and in a democratic or a politic context can now be seen as a kind of a complement or something that follows from this primal activeness. And of course, at the same time, this primal activeness allows the broadcasters to see themselves as serving this primal need or this primal right even. So a motive such as democracy follows in the eyes of these broadcasters from recognizing this need and right to be active. While, of course, at the same time, conveniently, this same activity serves strategic needs for exploiting interactivity and securing loyalty. So this is hardly surprising. Instead of speaking about democracy in terms of procedure, specifying it and rigidifying it in ways that would be kind of, just hard to handle in everyday production, you retain it as this general ideal, and you latch it onto premises that are really easy to work with and sort of pleasant to work with, such as the activeness that you are currently being so responsive to by offering interactive services. The last thing I'm going to say or to suggest is a kind of a development that we think we are seeing that from these informants, that participation is being conceived of predominantly as a media thing, something that the media should handle. And in order to explain that, I have to sort of take the route via a very, very common common current strategy, which is platform saturation. The strategy of spreading your brand or spreading your format onto to a large number of platforms in order to sort of saturate the environment of the audience, in order to be available at the maximum number of places and points. This is this strategy is one that's fairly clearly expressed by the director of programming in RK. You know, our goal is reaching everyone in the country with licensed, financed public service on all platforms. This notion of ubiquitousness, and omnipresence, it's sort of a strategy that lies behind spreading formats and brands onto a lot of platforms. This notion that platforms converge into one big box doesn't quite seem to be as fashionable anymore. It's sort of, you can find it here and there in our survey, but when people are talking in more concrete terms about how they handle many platforms, it's almost like the more the better kind of logic. You know, let's just spread out and be everywhere. This is something you will clearly find in the speech of Mark Thompson that Brian McNair was mentioning. I don't know if he actually originated the expression "martini media." Yeah, it comes from the an old martini ad and the slogan "everyone, everywhere, every time." I think it's the slogan, and this now gets moved on over to platforms. You know. Thank you. Thank you. I don't drink the stuff, so can't remember. This sort of strategy of platform, multi-platform service that sort of saturates the environment of the audience or the user, I think encourages the media industries to think about participation as their job. This is now something that we do, something that we are in charge of. And, you know, it's tempting to make a contrast between traditional public service broadcasting, which was about encouraging participation outside of the media. You know, of course, if you go far back in time, you will find, you know, actual broadcasters saying, "Turn off the TV, you know, go for a good long walk, read a book to your children, and, you know, above else, vote in elections." And that, also for public service broadcasters, seems to somehow fade. And they start to picture themselves as the arena for participation. So participation is something that goes on not outside the media, but more and more inside the media, in the eyes of the public service broadcasters. I think this sort of view was kind of nicely encapsulated by the editor in chief of it's not a public service broadcaster. It's this local paper, Bergens Tidende. Instead of going to the market square, they come here. So on that note, I'll finish off.